Hello and welcome to the Thursday, October 20th edition of Juno Afternoon, coming at you live from downtown Juno at KTOO.org. We've got a great show. We'll be talking about what's happening at UAS and the Juno World Affair Council this weekend. We'll get a preview of Saturday's presentation at the City Museum. Terry Tibbett will be here about her Friday concert, and we'll end with Megan Garrison with Arts Up. Stay tuned.
Reporting from the Alaska Federation of Natives Convention in Fairbanks, I'm Zachariah Hughes. Even before the convention's official start, there was some big news. AFN President Julie Kitka told the audience at the Tribal Leaders Conference Wednesday morning that the AFN board has decided to weigh in on the upcoming presidential election.
I'm very pleased to convey to you that the AFN board voted to endorse Hillary Clinton. And This is the first time in AFN's 50-year history that we've ever endorsed a presidential candidate.
Kitka says the gesture isn't intended to tell anyone how to vote, but is meant to show leadership at a critical time for politics that directly impact Alaska Native peoples. The three-page resolution lists Clinton's promises and record on issues relevant to Indigenous communities.
Our number one thing is we don't want to be marginalized. We don't want to be put to be a target where all we're doing is raising money for litigation and fighting for our rights. We want to establish our rights and build on them and have a future for our children and grandchildren.
The resolution does not mention the name of Clinton's opponent, Republican Donald J. Trump. Kitka says more details will come out during AFN, though this is the board's first presidential endorsement. In 2014, AFN broke precedent by coming out in support of the Walker-Mallott unity ticket, as well as Mark Begich's re-election campaign for U.S. Senate. Though the endorsement is symbolically significant, it's not clear if it'll have much of an impact at the polls.
So my name is Megan Topcock. My Instagram name is Sahavana. My family's originally from Nome, Alaska, but I'm currently living in Anchorage, finishing up my third year of law school.
Topcock was originally a strong Bernie Sanders supporter, but says her mind has been made up for a while to vote for Clinton, partly because of what she sees as a record of supporting Indigenous issues.
She has a much better developed tribal policy. She's done much better work with tribes around across the state, and I know that she'll carry that commitment to Indian country forward. So it was fairly clear for me, as an Indigenous person, who I would support in the upcoming presidential election.
Topcock thinks that given the combative political climate, the move by the AFN board is opportune, particularly as many people in Alaska look to the body for leadership on political matters. Topcock was speaking on the last day of the 33rd Elders and Youth Conference. The morning began with songs from the Pava Inupiaq dance group from Fairbanks. One departure from past years, Topcock says, was the number of events that featured hands-on activities, like a session on wild berries, native tattooing, and a demonstration by Marjorie Kunak-Tabone on how to process a fur seal.
Marge doing seal cutting was really awesome, just to kind of see someone really demonstrate that, especially for people who are living in urban areas of parts of the state where you don't do as much subsistence hunting, where you only get home so often. So it's been really awesome, just kind of applying what we've been learning and seeing the work that people are doing to really revive our culture and our languages is really beautiful.
No coincidence that this year's Elders and Youth was more hands-on. The conference's leaders say putting cultural lessons directly into practice is becoming a central tenet of the annual event.
My name is Dewey Kosliar Hoffman, Kosliar Sa'uza, Plegu Tanislan, Bazito Tanislan. I'm Corey Khan Athabaskan from Ruby.
Hoffman says organizers are building more cultural practice into the program itself, even smaller gestures like saying traditional introductions and lessons on preparing foods. The first seal that was processed, for example, was distributed to elders during closing ceremonies, with youth dutifully running between tables to deliver Ziploc bags of meat and yellow jars of seal oil. Hoffman hopes the approach will help young people treat culture and values as something to be applied throughout everyday life.
There's a saying that we like to perpetuate and it originates from Benny Shendo down in the Zuni Pueblo, who once said, "Don't teach me about my culture. Use my culture to teach me."
The Elders and Youth Conference passed 5 resolutions concerned with substance abuse, advancing racial equity, and returning remains from a 4-bar boarding school in Pennsylvania. Reporting from Elders and Youth, I'm Zachariah Hughes.
The AFN Newscast is a production of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation and Native Voice One. Funding provided by the Siri Foundation, Calista Corporation, the Atwood Foundation, Centers for Medicare and Medicaid, ConocoPhillips, Manilik Association, Rasmussen Foundation, and South Central Foundation. This is a production of KNBA, Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, and Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
It is 6 minutes past the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon. It's Thursday, October 20th. We're coming at you live from downtown Juno from the KTOO studios. Jeff Brown is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. And the weather right now, it is 39 degrees at the airport, 42 downtown Juneau, 36 in the valley, and 42 in balmy Douglas. And tonight we're looking at scattered rain showers in the evening, and then tomorrow numerous rain showers, but it's not raining right now. Okay, let's kick off the show. We've got a studio full of people. We have Chancellor Rick Caulfield from UAS. We have Dr. Natalie Williams here. She is visiting Juno. She's one of the keynote speakers. She's going to be launching this a joint venture between UAS and the World Affairs Council called Human Migration and Refugees, Peril and Hope. Welcome to the studio.
Great. Well, thank you, Joan. Really appreciate the opportunity. You know, we're excited to jointly host with the Juno World Affairs Council our annual forum on world issues. And this year's forum, starting tonight, is on human migration and refugees, peril and hope. So we're really pleased to have Dr. Williams here from the University of Washington. She's just arrived and first time to Alaska, but she's going to be providing our lead-off talk tonight, and it's open to the public, and it's free at the University of Alaska Southeast, our Egan Lecture Hall, starting at 7 p.m. tonight. And she's going to be talking about migrants, immigrants, and refugees, what we know, what we don't know, and why we care. So she'll talk about that in just a moment. But I wanted to just give your listeners a quick overview of the schedule. Tonight, starting at 7, Egan Lecture Hall, Dr. Williams' talk. And then tomorrow afternoon, 2 o'clock to 3:15 in the Egan Lecture Hall, a talk also on the topic of migrants and refugees in Europe. And then tomorrow evening at 7 o'clock, our regular evening at Egan talk in the Egan Library, and this is Dr. Jim Hollifield, who's coming from Southern Methodist University and the Wilson Center, talking about the global migration crisis and policy responses. And then finally on Saturday, really all day Saturday, starting at 9 a.m., all of these events in the Egan Lecture Hall, a series of presentations by distinguished visitors who are coming to Juneau from various universities to share their perspective on human migration and refugees. And long and the short of it, I encourage people to go to www.jwac, which is jwac.org, or simply jwac.org, and the schedule and all the information about the speakers is there. So we're really pleased to host the event and looking forward to the lecture tonight by Dr. Williams, who's here with us today.
It sounds fascinating and so incredibly timely, of course. So Dr. Williams is an associate professor in the Jackson School of International Studies and the Department of Sociology at the University of Washington. Her research focuses on migration in general. Before her academic career, she worked for the United Nations Population Fund in Cambodia, and she's here in Juneau to talk this evening at the university for this joint venture between the World Fair Forum and UAS, Human Migration and Refugees. And the title of your talk tonight is Migrants, Immigrants, and Refugees, What We Know and What We Don't Know and Why We Care. Welcome to the show, Dr. Williams. And let's talk a little bit about your talk this tonight. And then I'd like to talk to you about why you got into this field. All right. So what can we expect tonight? Not the whole thing, just maybe some highlights about your talk tonight and the theme, let's say.
Well, what you can expect is that I veered a little from the title I had originally planned 2 months ago. So migration is in the public conversation these days, the public, the media. I mean, it's in the presidential campaign these days, and there's a lot of thoughts and ideas flying around, and there's a lot of numbers flying around. And not all of them are accurate, and a lot of the discussion isn't really on based on what's going on. So first I want to talk about what's really going on, and based on that, what really are the questions we should be talking about. And so by doing that, I was hoping to frame some of the conversation going on for the next few days. In addition to talking about what's going on, I just want to present some broad frameworks of how we can think about it. Our thinking about migration in the public and academic conversations is really defined a lot by policy and decisions that have been made in the last 50 years that aren't always that accurate and sometimes misleading. So I also want to frame some different ways we can think about what's actually going on in the world.
Okay. It sounds fascinating and timely and so important. Before I ask you questions about what you just said, I'm curious to know why you entered this field. Personally, what drew you to this field of study?
So I was living in Cambodia, in Phnom Penh, working for the United Nations Population Fund, and they dealt with fertility, reproductive health, and migration and mortality. So I was hearing about all these things, and then every night I would go with my friend and walk along the waterfront that was kind of the boulevard of the city, and you'd see all these guys there from the countryside. They would come into Phnom Penh, and they would make money by running thick clothes, bicycle rickshaws. And in the evenings, they didn't make much money off of it. You'd get across town for 25 cents in the hot weather. In the evening, you'd see them all lined up on the waterfront, sleeping on their cyclos, incredibly skinny. I mean, you could see the muscles bulging out of their legs because they're bicycling all day, these steel contraptions. And I got to thinking, you know, they came here to make money, but I can't imagine they're making much money. And they look awfully sick. They look awfully skinny. Like, it just didn't seem like, from my perspective, like they were really getting what they had come to do. And then I really started to think about migration more and why people are migrating and what they're getting out of it and why perhaps they are getting something out of it. And if they're not, why do people keep doing this? So that's where migration came from.
If you're just joining us, Dr. Natalie Williams is in the studio with Chancellor Caulfield from UAS, and they're talking about this World Affairs Forum and UAS co-production of a three-day seminar with fantastic speakers coming to talk about here in Juneau about human migration. So, Dr. Williams, how long have you been in the field?
I've been in the field 13 years.
And what's going on now? How is that different from when you started?
Not a whole lot. The field of migration isn't the most popular, which is unfortunate because we don't know as much about it as we probably should. One of the reasons I think it's not that common to study is it's really hard. Because if you want to study migration, by definition, migrants are everywhere but the place you are studying them in. If you want to study migrants who leave Juneau, they are everywhere but Juneau, and that makes it very hard. And then when they move from one place, they move to another place, and so on. They're hard to track down. They're hard to talk to. So it's a very difficult thing to study. Not many people do. So the field moves forward slowly. There's also very little research on refugees, about what's actually going on. That's happening more in Europe. You find more people studying conflict and issues related to armed conflict, but not so much in the U.S. So I'm trying to push that agenda here, and that's moving forward slowly.
And on the world stage, so that's the picture of what's happening in the academia. Mm-hmm. But on the world stage, from where you started 13 years ago, having that moment in Cambodia saying, I find this interesting, I need mm-hmm. more information about it, to mm-hmm. what's happening now. Is there a big difference, or is it because it seems migration is so in the news, and mm-hmm. Has things definitively changed in 13 years? You're the expert, so I'm asking you. It seems like we're in a place where we're in a bit of a crisis.
Yeah, that's a great question, and I'm actually going to talk about that tonight. So the answer is yes and no. No, there's always been a lot of migrants. There's always been millions of people migrating around the world. Yes, now there is a migration crisis in the sense that, and we're seeing unprecedented numbers of refugees and asylees entering Europe. That's never happened before. But in the late 80s and early 90s, we saw a similarly interesting huge spike of migrants from Latin America coming to the U.S., fleeing wars in Central America. And, you know, that was a huge spike. We didn't really know what to do about it. And then it calmed down when the wars calmed down there. And now it's moved to Europe because neighboring countries are having wars there. And we're not seeing that spike here. So, yes, in the sense that Europe has never seen this many people. No, in the sense that the spike has happened before. And it will probably happen again. The reason it's a crisis now, and that it's been a crisis in the past, is that we don't know when to expect this. So we don't know what to do about it when we don't see it coming until it's here.
Interesting. Very, very interesting. Thank you. So, Dr. Natalie Williams, tonight, Migrants, Immigrants, and Refugees, What We Know, What We Don't Know, and Why We Care. That's 7 o'clock at the Egan Lecture Hall at UAS. And then tomorrow, starting at 2, and then having the Egan Library evening at Egan at 7, and then all day Saturday. So, I have more questions for you, Dr. Williams. So, let's just talk about the presidential candidates, okay? Mm. Would you say any of them, we'll throw everybody in, any of them are representing a clear picture of what's really going on?
I think Donald Trump is not representing a clear picture at all of what's going on. That's not particularly surprising. I mean, we've heard that from the news media. Hillary Clinton, I've heard her say that we need immigration reform. I haven't heard a whole lot of specifics about what that'll constitute. And I think that's similar to what's been going on in the federal government for years now. Everybody knows we need immigration reform. We need to do something about it. I haven't seen a whole lot of clear proposals that are moving forward. One of those reasons is perhaps that we don't know a lot about it. Another reason that I think, just from listening to conversations, this is not my particular area of study, but my feeling is that we need immigrants in this country. They occupy a certain sector of the workforce that we need, and Americans, native-born Americans, don't do. And I think the government knows this. I think our Senate, our representatives, our executive branch, I think they know this, but they're also battling against a public word that says, no, we're scared of immigrants, we don't want any more. And so there's this push-pull of they know we need them, but they have to pretend like we don't need them, and we want to get rid of them. And so I think that's one reason why we might not be seeing immigration reform.
Well, that's a whole another conversation, which I think would be fascinating. But I have one more question, really one.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think the fear that's happening today or the xenophobia is new, or is this just the modern-day version of how people feel about migration and immigrants? Have felt.
I think it's old. I think it's centuries old. I mean, we are now afraid of immigrants from Latin America and the Middle East. But look at 60 years ago, we were afraid of Germans. Right after World War II, of course, we were afraid of Germans. I just heard a quote the other day that Ben Franklin, one of our founding fathers, he was actually publicly wrote about being afraid of Germans and how we didn't want them in this country, and they were, what did he say? They were dumb and they were dumb and sketchy or something like that, and which is shocking. And now, you know, we're not scared of Germans anymore. They're part of the majority white population in this country, and now we've shifted our xenophobia towards other groups. But there's always been that xenophobia there. So I don't think it's anything new.
Well, thank you, Dr. Natalie Williams, and Chancellor Caulfield, would you like to add anything?
Well, just that the talk tonight is meant for members of the public. You don't have to know a lot about this. In fact, it's designed so that you'll be able to walk in and learn a whole lot more. And we've talked about the fact that these are important issues affecting all of us today. The Juno World Affairs Council brings the world to Juno, and this is an effort to partner with the university. So we're really pleased to be a part of it. And listeners, can go to jwac.org. JWAC.org, and they can find information about the schedule and the guest presenters who are here over the weekend.
Yes, it sounds fascinating. So the full schedule is online. Everything's happening at UAS. It's a joint partnership between UAS and Junior World Affairs Council, both organizations. We thank for being such great community partners in bringing this type of symposium lecture series to Juno, and I think that's really fascinating. And I'm so happy that you originally 2 months ago you had one idea in mind, and now you've shifted it to be even more timely, which I think is great. So thank you all for coming in today.
Yep.
We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
immigration scene. Shining and feeling clean, could it be a sin? I got stopped by the immigration man. Said he doesn't know if he can. Let me in. Let me in. Immigration man, can I cross the line and pray I can stay another day? Let me in. Immigration man, I won't tow your line today. I can't see it anyway. With his immigration face, giving me a paper chase. But the sun was coming, 'cause all at once it looked into my face, stamped a number over my face, and he sent me running. Won't you let me in, immigration man? Can I cross the line and pray I can stay another day? My immigration form, big enough to keep me warm when a cold wind's coming.
It's 22 minutes past the hour. You're listening to KTOO Juneau Afternoon. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. Jeff Brown's at the board. He's the producer and engineer of the show. In the studio with us now is John Hayes. He's here to talk about a preview of a piano recital this Sunday. Welcome to the show, John.
Yeah, thank you for having me here. And yeah, so
what time is the recital?
It is 3 p.m. at the Northern Light Church.
And what is it?
It is a classical piano recital, and it is the second of a series of five recitals that we've been organizing to raise money to buy a piano for the arts center that will be built
in
a couple years, the new Juneau Arts Center, I believe.
Yes, that sounds great. So it will be piano and flute?
Just piano.
Oh, okay. And are you?
Yep.
You're the solo performer?
Yes, I am.
All right. Tell me about yourself.
Well, I began piano when I was 15. And
are you from Juneau?
Yes.
Okay.
I grew up in Juneau. I was homeschooled. And I was about 13 when I first noticed music, when I even cared about it at all. So I tried to teach myself violin for a year without a teacher. That doesn't work too well. And then I took a course on how to read music and got an electric keyboard, and I just practiced that a lot.
It was it. That was it.
Yeah.
That was it. So you've been playing for how long?
10 years.
10 years. And tell us a little bit about the concert. What will you be playing? What kind of music? A classical book.
Yeah, yeah, of course. So I've got a Haydn sonata, and then the main bulk of the program is two Chopin ballades and Liszt's two legends. So it's mostly a romantic heavy recital. The ballades, of course, ballade being like a form of storytelling, but I'm not going to talk or sing or anything, don't worry. So it's a type of music that suggests that there's a story behind it. Now, Chopin said to Schumann when he met that he was inspired by the poetry of Polish poet Mickiewicz. We have no idea what poems those might have been. There's lots of bad history and stuff that's been said since the pieces were published, trying to say it's this one, it's this one. We don't know that. So it's more of just an opportunity for the listener to supply their own story.
interpret it as they will.
Yes.
That sounds great. So before I let you go, John Hayes, Sunday recital at Northern Lights Church, a fundraiser for a beautiful, fantastic piano for the New Arts Center. It's 3 p.m. Northern Lights on Sundays. So, John, as a musician, you're obviously a classical musician, because when I said it would be classical, you said, of course. So you're a classical musician. What is it that draws you to certain types of music?
I love so many types. You know,
I'm not asking you to name them. What is it about a piece? Is it the feel? Is it I don't know.
You know, that is a good question. There's like I've never been terribly drawn in by words. I can, but for me, it's all in the rhythm and the harmony and the way it makes you. When I'm listening to a great piece that I love, it makes me sort of breathe in my gut in a certain way.
Interesting.
If that makes sense.
It does.
It, as you're listening to it, it sort of organizes how you use your body.
So it puts you, I'm not even going to interpret that. So there it is. That sounds great. So, and these pieces that you picked are music that affected you in that way.
Yeah.
Great.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I always try to play.
Excellent.
It's best to play things that you want to play.
Exactly. And he didn't bring a CD, so next time you're going to have to bring a CD.
Yes.
Okay, great.
I
3
will.
O'clock Sunday, Northern Lights, fundraiser, yes. John Hayes.
Fundraiser, at, free.
Free,
at,
well,
yes.
Hopefully donations, right?
Yes.
Because you want to raise funds.
Yes.
The piano. And John Hayes and a piano. Sounds lovely. Thank you so much for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.
It was a pleasure to meet you. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 20th of October, 2016. It's the birthday of Ferdinand Joseph Lamenth, New Orleans, 1890, better known as Jelly Roll Morton, great piano player, playing in the bars and brothels of New Orleans, wearing his turquoise coat, a Stetson hat, and tight striped pants. One of the biggest names in jazz in the 1920s, and the first true jazz composer, because he was the first to go beyond improvisation to write down jazz tunes. King Porter Stomp, Black Bottom Stomp, New Orleans Blues, the original Jelly Roll Blues. It was on this day, 1892, big parade in Chicago to dedicate the World's Columbian Exposition commemorating the 400th anniversary of Columbus's arrival in the Americas. It was at the Columbian Exposition that Juicy Fruit Gum was first shown to the public, and Cracker Jack, and Pabst Blue Ribbon Beer, and Cream of Wheat. It was the debut of the Ferris Wheel, invented by George Washington Gage Ferris, Jr., 264-foot tall wheel. It was at that exposition that Gottlieb Daimler displayed an automobile powered by combustion engine. It's the birthday of the poet Robert Pinsky, Long Branch, New Jersey, 1940, grew up reading dictionaries. He said, read as much as you want. This word reminds you of that word. You could just wander. It didn't matter if you lost your place. It wasn't tyrannical, like a story. Robert Pinsky, who said, poetry takes care of itself. All art does. That is paramount. In a survival race, I'm quite sure poetry will long outlast reality TV and Twitter. It's the birthday of John Dewey, Burlington, Vermont, 1859, the father of progressive education, combining learning with doing, treating children as individuals, teaching them how to live as members of a community. John Dewey once gave a speech in which he said there was so much knowledge at universities because the freshmen brought everything they knew to college with them and the seniors never took anything away. It's the birthday of the singer Adelaide Hall, born New York City, 1901, who did the wordless solo on Duke Ellington's Creole Love Call. and it's the birthday of the composer Charles Ives, Danbury, Connecticut, 1874, who put hymns and college songs and gospel revival songs, military marches, into his compositions. Charles Ives, who said, "Awards are merely the badges of mediocrity." Here's a poem for today by Wendell Berry entitled "Goods." "It's the immemorial feelings I like the best. Hunger, thirst, their satisfaction, work weariness, earned rest, the falling again from loneliness to love, the green growth the mind takes from the pastures in March, the gaiety in the stride of a good team of Belgian mares that seems to shudder from me through all my ancestry." "Goods" by Wendell Berry from his new collected poems, published by Counterpoint and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, now available on iOS devices. Subscriptions available at poetrymagazine.org. And by Lumosity, brain training with over 50 challenging games, from scientists working with university researchers to push cognitive research forward. Learn more at lumosity.com. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It is 28 minutes to the hour. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO, just two O's, not an extra O. Our next guests, Kaya Hendrickson and Marie Darlin, are here from the Juno Douglas City Museum, and they're here to talk about a special presentation this Saturday. Welcome to the show, both of you.
Thank you.
So there's been a year-long exhibit called Disasters at Home at the museum.
That's correct. If you've been to the museum sometime in the last year, you've probably seen it. It's a collection of photographs from the City Museum, and they document 11 different disasters that occurred in Juneau over the last 95 years.
Wow.
And so this Saturday, we are going to be having a presentation of some local folks who actually lived through some of these events, and they will be talking about their experiences. And the panel will be led by Marie Darlin.
Oh, great. And what time is that on Saturday?
It starts at 10:30 and it goes until noon, and there will be free coffee from Heritage Coffee Company.
Oh, great. So, Marie, what can people expect on Saturday morning?
Well, this is one of our usual coffee and collections that we do once or twice a month during the winter, and it's on topics that we feel are of interest to local people. And so since this exhibit has been up all the summer, where we've had a lot of people commenting on it, that we tried to have pictures of the different fires and then the Gold Creek flooding, which is another thing, and then, of course, the snow slide on Barron's Avenue in 62, I think it was. We've had a little trouble trying to find some people who actually were a part of that or involved in it anyway or anything. Most of those people that were living there are no longer in Juneau, you know, for one reason or another. So we do have some of our people who can remember it and will talk about it. Like we can remember one fellow who was in high school said he remembers standing on top of that snow slide. It did not get down to the high school. But anyway, and then we had an avalanche which came down off of Gastineau Avenue in 1936 down onto South Franklin Street. And so we have a couple people to talk about that.
Really?
So we're back in history, really. So most of the people that are going to be talking were not there at that time, let's say, with even starting with some of the fires. So it's just trying to find people who... Well, to start with the fire department, we have volunteer firemen yet who can remember when some of these things were talked about by the volunteer firemen. So it wasn't that they were there, but they've heard about them, and we've got all kinds of pictures which we've had up in this exhibit, which show what kinds of things happened over the years. And so that's what we've been really working on the last 2 weeks, trying to find people who could talk about this, either from what their parents may have told them or somebody else may have told them, whatever, but to have somebody who can give us a little more history than what just was in those pictures. So with that, we are hoping to have a good turnout. We also will hope to have some people in the audience who might want to make comments or may have done some research work on some of these things and will want to add to the conversation.
Yeah.
So we're really encouraging local people to come if they have anything they would want to add regarding any of these kinds of disasters. Like, you know, one person I ran into, which we were talking about this, and she said, you know, the one thing that I've always wondered is, why does Gold Creek have a concrete lining? Well, anybody that comes Saturday is going to find out.
That's good. I live right by it. I think I'll definitely have to go. If you're just joining us, I just interrupted Marie Darling as she was trying to get out her last thought. Sorry about that. About the Saturday coffee and collection event at the museum, the Juno Douglas City Museum. It's going to be Disasters at Home and looking at 95 local disasters over the past 95 years
yes.
here in Juneau, and trying to get some local subject matter experts, whether or not they lived through it, which might be unlikely, but at least heard about it. It sounds like a great morning. So that sounds wonderful. And we probably just have a few more minutes. Is there something else you want to talk about before you go besides this particular coffee and collection?
Plug that for the month of November at the museum, we're going to be celebrating Dr. Walter Sobolev Day for the whole month this year. So people can come by the museum and get a complimentary note card and postage to send a note of encouragement to someone in their lives in honor of Dr. Sobolev.
Oh, my. That sounds lovely. Well, we're running out of time, but please come back and tell us what's going on at the museum. And best of luck this Saturday. It sounds like a fascinating talk about coffee and collection of fantastic history and Junoites. It sounds really lovely. So thanks for all you do. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back.
This is Bird Note. This past summer, a man trying to sleep got really annoyed with his neighbor on the other side of the woods, who he thought kept backing up a big truck. The next day he grumbled, "What were you doing? You kept me up most of the night." "Oh, you must have heard the saw-wet owl," the neighbor said. Named for what, to some, sounds like a saw being sharpened on a stone, northern saw-wet owls are common in forests across southern Canada and the northern U.S. At this time of year, many move southward, making a large concentration, especially in the region of the Great Lakes. To our ear, the advertising call of the male, made mostly in spring and summer, sounds awfully repetitive. But researchers think female saw-wets hear variety. See if you can. Here are two males. Listen carefully to the pacing of their hoots. Here's the first. Here's the second. Some give a prelude to their advertising call. In the fall, the birds make a skew call. And here's a twitter call with a snap of the bill. Quite a variety for one of North America's smallest owls, the northern saw-wet. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Programming is made possible in part by Juneau's own Alaska Pure Mountain Spring Water. Available in Juneau stores or delivered in 5-gallon jugs to homes and offices. 780-4262.
It is 20 minutes to the hour, Thursday, October 20th, Juneau afternoon. Jeff Brown is at the board. He is the producer and engineer of the show. I'm Joan Pardis, your Thursday host. Our next guest is Catherine Hill Christabel. She is the owner of Twilight Cafe, and that cafe is located in the new Alaska State Museum. Welcome to the show.
Hello.
Hello. So let's talk about what kind of food and drink you offer at the Alaska State Museum. I was there the other day, and I noticed your cafe, and it looked fabulous, but I did not go in. So can you tell me what kind of food you serve?
Right now, I serve some Filipino food, like our adobo, but we kind of like put it in a burrito also, like a Mexican-style burrito.
Oh,
so. But I put my adobo. It can be chicken or pork, or you can also eat it with steamed rice.
Oh, that sounds yummy. What are your hours?
We start like 7:30 until the museum is closed.
Right. And do you have to, like, can you just go to your cafe? Or do you have to, is it part of the whole museum experience? Do you have to pay to go into the museum to go to your restaurant? You could just go to the restaurant because it's right up front
in
the lobby.
Yeah, but it's still in the same building.
Okay, great. So if you open at 7:30, you probably have some breakfast food and some coffee.
Yes, we have Tocino breakfast. It's sweet pork, sweet marinated pork. It's like a Filipino style.
Oh.
Like Tocino. We call it Tocino.
Oh, that sounds great.
We put it in the olives in a burrito or an English muffin.
Yum. That sounds lovely. Okay, so you're at the Alaska State Museum. You're open when the museum is open, and you're open a little earlier. And you have plans for another location, is that correct?
Oh, right now, from where we at before.
Across from the State Office Building?
Across the State Office Building. I still plan to open that, but I'm not sure when, right now.
Okay.
I'm still planning about it.
Okay.
But I'm still going to open that.
All right. So along with your specialties, your Filipino dishes, do you have sweets or anything along those lines?
Oh, we have smoothies.
Mm. Oh, really?
Right, right. We have real fruit smoothies, but right now any baked goods, I really don't bake. But I'm still learning some stuff because I used to work at state office. And now I quit, so this is my only full time to work really in the cafe to help my husband, Ariel Cristobal.
Oh, that sounds great.
I want to say hi to him.
Shout out. You hear that? That sounds great. All right, well, thanks for coming by. That's great. Filipino food at the Alaska State Museum. That's
yeah, but I also have carry Alaskan tea and honey.
Oh.
And yes, and I still plan to put more Alaskan stuff in the State Museum.
Oh, that sounds great. You're definitely going to have to go check it out. So if you haven't been to the new State Museum, the APK building, and the State Library as well, it's a beautiful building. And the cafe is located on the first floor. And I have to say, when I walked in there just last week, and I really was taking note seriously this time, as opposed to being an event or going through with a tour. It was just so nice to see your cafe because it made me feel like I was like in a major city with a real museum with a cafe. It just was really fabulous, which we are. We are in a major city with a real museum and a fantastic cafe. So thank you so much for coming by.
Thank you for inviting me.
Right. And anytime, come on by, let us know if you've got some new stuff or when you open that new location.
Yes.
Sounds great.
Thank
All right,
you.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Looking back, 50 years of AFN. One of the most important pieces of legislation in Alaska's Native history is the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. The Alaska Federation of Natives got its start at a meeting in 1966 when 400 Alaska Natives met in Anchorage to talk about how to stop the state and others from taking their land. For the next 5 years, AFN focused on talks that led to the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act of 1971, or ANCSA. Ted Stevens was a U.S. Senator who worked to get the bill passed.
There was something for all Alaskans in the settlement of the land claims.
ANCSA didn't transfer money and title to lands to tribes, but to for-profit Native corporations. Janie Leask was the president of Alaska Federation of Natives.
I think that what ANCSA did was to provide a vehicle for Alaska Natives to, first of all, become economic powers. I never thought that we would have such powerfully economic, successful corporations that we do have now.
Former Cook Inlet Region Incorporated President Roy Hundorf says tribes can provide important services, too. A few years ago, he urged the state to work with tribes.
if more recognition was given to the tribes who can do certain things that the state otherwise would have to do. There is a lot of mutual benefit to doing this, in my view. Other states have done this, and they're very happy about it.
Since then, AFN has continued to fight for Native interests in Congress. For instance, it worked to ensure subsistence was protected in the Alaska National Interest Lands Conservation Act of 1980. Looking Back, 50 Years of AFN is a production of Quantic Broadcast Corporation.
Hello, you're listening to Juno Afternoon. Terry Tibbett is in the studio with us. So now, between Terry and Jeff Brown, I'm the least qualified person in this studio to actually lead the discussion, but we will do it anyway. Terry is here to talk about her Friday show tomorrow downstairs at the 360 studio, part of the Alaska Originals 360 North series, and it starts at 7 o'clock tomorrow. It's going to be an hour long. Doors open at 6:30. Hi, Terry. How are you?
Good to see you. Thanks.
Yeah. So let's talk about your music. You are one of those iconic Juno musicians, and I'm just wondering, where are you now with your music? What are you doing?
Well, I just released a CD. It's a compilation of songs that I've written over the last 20 years. And so that's what this concert is, sort of a retrospective of the last 20 years of music. But I've been in Alaska 40 years this month. So it's sort of my 40-year anniversary for being in Alaska performing. And so it seems like a great time to kind of do a retrospective. So I'm going to do some songs from the 70s that I wrote back in the 70s, and then some from this new album, which is called Raven's Gully.
Oh, Raven's Gully. That's great. And if people are interested, cannot come tomorrow, and are interested to buy your CD, where can they do that?
Well, they can go to my website, which is www.tibbett.com.
Or just search Terry Tibbett.
If you search Terry Tibbett, I'm the first one. Yeah.
There you go. So you do a lot of things as a musician. Let's talk about all the different things that you do.
Well, I've been on the Artists in the Schools, the statewide program that supports artists going in and teaching music in the schools. I've been on that roster for since 1981, and I just did a residency in August, or September, sorry, last month. So
At what school?
At Gamble, up near Nome on St. Lawrence Island.
Sure.
I'm still going out and doing music residencies. And that's teaching music, of course, K-12. I still perform around town. I host open mic at the Alaskan Hotel and Bar on twice a month. I still do that. And I perform at concerts. I was performing every year at Home Skillet Fest in Sitka before they stopped doing it. So that was 10 years of that. And the Folk Festival, of course, I'm still playing annually there. And I have a day job now, and I also have other interests. I write. I'm working on a novel, and so I have a lot of other things I'm doing. But music, of course, is still at the core of everything that I do. So this concert is just another opportunity to be in Juno and kind of go the next step and do something on television. It's going to be a live recording, and people from all over the state. It'll be broadcast eventually all over the state, which is nice. I don't think I've had that kind of exposure before, so it's nice to branch out.
Totally well-deserved. So tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, downstairs at the KTOO Studios, this 360 North, Terry Tibbett, Alaska Originals.
And can I just mention I'm going to be playing with some friends? So I'll be doing some songs by myself on guitar and dulcimer, but also be joined by friends Bob Bloom on bass, Ryland Bueller on guitar, Luke Weld on keyboards, and Ryan Cortez on drums. So it'll be a mix and match of some solo stuff, but also with the band, with my friends.
It sounds like a lovely evening.
Thanks
for dropping by. We're going to take a short break, and then we're going to end with Arts Up.
Moon around me, yeah, me around the sun.
It is 10 minutes to the hour. You're listening to KTOO, its very own Juno Afternoon, KTOO's very own Juno Afternoon. I just want to say one thing before we get right into Arts Up with Megan Garrison. So Halloween's around the corner, and right after Halloween comes Thanksgiving, not Christmas, thank you. And the Glory Hall is out there asking for people who want to donate or are in need of a meal. So that website is feedjuno.org, and they are located downtown, and the number is 586-4159, or you could just search for Glory Hall, a great cause doing great work in our community. And with that note, another great resource in our community is the Juno Arts and Humanities Council that keeps Juno's art scene buzzing, that's for sure. I'd like a staff of like five doing the work of thousands. But, and one of those staff members, Megan Garrison, is here to tell us what's going on this weekend.
Thanks for having me. Well, as usual, it is a jam-packed week. I'm probably just going to breeze through the weekend here and into early week. But a quick announcement from our partner organization, Juno Jazz and Classics. They have a string workshop going on this weekend with some master teachers from Seattle, and they still have space available in those workshops. And you can call Reggie at 463-3378 to register your students for that string workshop.
Sounds great.
Speaking of students and music, the Thunder Mountain High School Band has concerts this weekend. So tonight from 6 to 7 p.m., the concert band, wind ensemble, and jazz band will play. And that's at Thunder Mountain High School. It is pay as you can. And then we move to Friday at 6:30 p.m., and they've got the orchestra and choir concert that night. Still at Thunder Mountain and still pay as you can.
Right. So, and speaking of the high school, the Addams Family opens tonight.
Yes,
correct?
That was the next on
Juno
my list.
Juno Douglas High School. Sorry,
Juno
JJ.
Douglas
You're
High
right.
School, yeah. The musical is for the Addams Family, and it is at 7 p.m. Thursday. Let me go down my list. And 2 p.m. Saturday.
And
there is a Friday one, which I'm...
I think it's...
Oh, there it is, 7 p.m. on Friday.
Thursday, Friday, and two shows on Saturday,
yep.
I think.
Two
yeah.
Yeah. 2 p.m. and a 7 p.m.
Yeah, at the high school, so that the downtown high
And
school.
If you need tickets to that, we do have them at the Jack, and they're at all the usual spots. We have a very cool lecture series going on at the Alaska State Museum. It's called the Alaska Positive Show, and it is a biennial exhibit of Alaska photography. And so it stretches, I want to say, 4 to 6 months, and each month is a featured photographer, local photographer, from the state. And this month is Larry McNeil, and that is Friday at 7 p.m. at the State Museum.
That sounds great.
And then there's a Monster Ball Halloween sponsored by Sigla. So Monster Ball is dress-up costume contest at Taku Lanes. Suggested donation of $10, and that starts at 8 p.m.
This Saturday?
This Saturday.
Oh, sounds fun.
Of course, there's a zombie run. I'm sure you guys know about that. On Sunday, the 5th annual zombie run, that's at 12 p.m. And that brings us to Monday, our very own concert, Women of the World. That's happening at Thunder Mountain on Monday the 24th at 7 p.m.
That sounds great.
Still tickets, and we've squeezed in a student show, so some kids are going to get to see them in the morning on Monday, which is always really fun.
And that's the way they roll into Juno Arts and Humanities Council. Are you coming? Well, I think you should actually go to every one of our schools.
Yes. We love it when they can do outreach, and not every concert does outreach, but this is going to be a really great one.
Yes, let's talk about it. So it's Women of the World, so it's four women, and they are singing a cappella?
They sing a cappella. They have a percussionist as well, but they can. I've been watching a lot of videos and playing their music quite a bit, and they sing everything from Japanese folk songs to Indian songs to African American spirituals. I saw some really fun. I was a choir member myself once upon a time, and some of my favorite choir songs were in there. They are from India, Italy, Japan, and Haiti by way of the U.S., and they perform at some amazing venues. So we're really lucky to have them here. They're at the end of a long tour all through Alaska,
and we're going to get to see them right before they head back down south.
That sounds great. So that's Monday at 7 p.m. at Thunder Mountain
High
School.
Yep.
And if people have any questions or did not really get the time or location, where can they find all this information?
Everything is online at www.jahc.org, or just give us a call at 586-ARTS. 2787.
That sounds great. Well, thanks for dropping by today.
Thanks for having me.
We're going to take a short break and we're going to wrap up the show. It is 4 minutes to the hour. We are wrapping up the Thursday, October 20th edition of Juno Afternoon. Right now it's 45 degrees. Isolated showers this afternoon. Tonight showers likely mainly after 4 a.m. Chance of precipitation is 60%. Tomorrow showers likely mainly before 10 a.m. And then tomorrow night scattered showers. We're also looking at showers likely on Saturday. Tomorrow, tune in. It looks like it's going to be a great show. There'll be information about the Juno Skating Club, the Alaska Positive Show that the Alaskan photographers, their show at the Alaska State Museum. Elaine Schroeder will be here to highlight the upcoming Climate Film Festival, and Christina May Erickson will be here with a preview of the very popular Friday Night Poetry Slam. And then tonight, 7 o'clock, tune in to hear the candidates for the State House at a recent forum. And then at 8 p.m., Ralph Nader is the guest on Alternative Radio. The subject is Sovereignty of the People. Thanks for joining us.